Hi, I'm Judy Frazier, president and founder of We the Kids. We the Kids puts God back into America's history. Listening to We the Kids radio show will inspire you and your kids to have a positive American identity, clear direction, and a powerful purpose for your life. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to We the Kids radio show for kids from 8 to 108. I am Arch Hunter, a father, a husband, and an historian.
And I'm Lydia Nuttall, a mom and executive board member for We the Kids and author of Forgotten American Stories, Celebrating America's Constitution. And in the show, we're going to hear from the We the Kids Liberty Players.
The mission of We the Kids is to put God back into America's stories, to help American kids be proud to be an American, to love and defend America's Constitution, and learn the principles of freedom that established unprecedented freedom in our country so that they can preserve freedom in America.
And that is so important. That's why we're doing this show. So we're glad you're listening.
Today's forgotten American story. What happened to those who signed the Declaration of Independence? And on a previous show, we learned from Lydia about Caesar Rodney, how he sacrificed his life for liberty, Robert Morris, how he sacrificed his fortune, and John Morton, how he sacrificed his sacred honor, three of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence.
And we also invited each of us to ponder, what personal sacrifices do we see ourselves having to make to preserve and defend independence and liberty in America?
Because, Lydia, we know that our freedom and independence needs to continue to be protected and preserved, and it's very fragile. It's an ongoing thing in each one of our lives, what we must defend and protect and continue on so that next generation can also have the same privileges that we have right now. So
Absolutely. Let
me ask you, what drove these men and their families to give up their lives, their fortunes, and sacred honor for the cause of liberty?
That's what's amazing is until I started learning about these 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence and trying to figure out what happened to them as a result of them signing that important document, it has made a difference, not just in America, but throughout the world. But they had families. So whatever the men sacrificed to sign it, it affected their families, their wives and their children as well. So we're going to learn in a little bit three of those stories of how the families of three of these gentlemen sacrificed, what sacrifices they had to make. But what made them sacrifice it is found, that answer is found in the Declaration of Independence itself. And it's something I never even knew about until I read the Declaration of Independence for myself as a grown-up, because it lists in the Declaration of Independence, 27 grievances against the King of Great Britain, who was the ruler of, we used to be called British America at the time. And it was horrible when you read the grievances that the signers listed of how the king was treating us as British Americans. I can understand why the colonists said, you know what, enough is enough. We're done. The next step, if we let this continue, is going to be slavery, is going to be bondage to this horrible king, this horrible government. And so there's some vocabulary words in the Declaration of Independence in the section that lists these 27 grievances that is possible some of our listeners don't know. And I thought it would be good to go over them, especially our littles, the littles that might be listening. So Arch, like, for instance, what's the word abuse to you mean?
Lydia, before I answer that, may I just add, when you were talking about these men and their families, what they sacrificed, a lot of people don't realize that not every member of a family was for the revolution. So many of these people who fought for our freedom had personal family members who opposed them, who were against them.
Wow.
I was thinking Benjamin Franklin's oldest son. He opposed the revolution, and he and Benjamin Franklin had a very cold, very, very cold relationship for the rest of their lives. And for many years, Franklin and his son never spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Knox's wife, Lucy Knox, Lucy Flucker Knox, her family were loyalists. So even within families, you know, not just our brothers and sisters or our children, other members of our family that took opposite positions on the revolution.
So it kind of reminds me of the Civil War.
Yeah. Lydia, this was a Civil War. This was our first Civil War.
That's true.
So, you know, when we think of what they sacrificed, particularly when we talk about families, it's much broader than just, you know, a brothers or sisters or our immediate family. It was our, you know, our extended family who might oppose what they were trying to fight and get our liberty. So.
And yet they carried on.
They carried on.
The signers really felt it was that important to carry on with independence, that they would sign the Declaration of Independence and go through that.
Yep.
Yeah, inner family. I didn't even think of that, that it would divide them from their own family members. Ow, that would be hard. But
I went on a bunny trail, Lydia, so you were asking me to find...
It's okay. So one of the words is abuse. We have the word usurpation. We have the word despotism, injured, tyranny, and tyrant. So, Arch, how about abuse? How would you define abuse?
Oh, the misuse or to treat a person or an animal or inanimate an object with cruelty or violence regularly or repeatedly.
All right, that sounds good to me. And then to usurp actually means to take, for instance, a position of power or importance illegally or by force. Mm-hmm. So the word usurp or usurpations, you'll hear that in the Declaration of Independence too when we read this one section. How about despotism?
I'm glad you said that word because it's a hard word for me to say for some reason. The exercise of absolute power, especially in a cruel and an oppressive way.
Yeah, ooh. Already I'm feeling anxious, like anxiety. I don't want this to ever happen to me or my kids. Injured, we kind of know what that means. It means to harm or damage something or someone. Tyranny means a cruel and oppressive government or rule. Cruel or oppressive government or rule. That's tyranny. Yeah. So tyrant, what do you think tyrant means then?
Well, Lydia, if I were to ask my sons the definition, they would probably say, that's our father. He's a tyrant. But not actually. It means a cruel and an oppressive ruler.
Okay, so you have tyranny, which is a cruel and oppressive government or rule, and a tyrant is a cruel and oppressive ruler. Mm-hmm. So the Declaration of Independence was calling out King George III, very specifically, and saying, in essence, you and your government are tyrannical. You're a cruel and oppressive ruler, and we're going to list all the things that give evidence to the entire world that you are to us as your own countrymen, as British Americans. So here's what it says in the Declaration of Independence that uses those words. It says, but when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, meaning to reduce the people under despotism or to take that position of power illegally or by force. It continues, it is their right, meaning it's the right of the people, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. And then it says, the history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny, meaning a cruel and oppressive government or rule, over these states, To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. And then it goes on and lists those 27 grievances, which, Arch, you're familiar with those, I know, because you're a history buff. You're a previous history teacher. And so the first 13 of those 27 grievances, or they call it 27 injuries by the King of Great Britain against the colonies. Can you give us kind of a synopsis of what those first 13 were addressing?
Well, and Lydia, if I may, before I do that, what do you believe caused these signers to finally write the Declaration of Independence? Because if these, and I'm not saying they're not, if these accusations are true, they went on for quite a long time. It just didn't take a year or 2 years for these things to happen. What is it that finally caused these signers of the Declaration to get to the point where they believed that there was no turning point? What made them... What was the breaking point?
Well, I can guess. You can either push the eject button and kick me off the show because I got it wrong, or you can tell me what it is. But they had passed several acts or bills or laws that the colonists really had no voice in making, that were, many were unjust. So they kind of had enough there. But I think if, you know, as I've read these, I think something that occurred to me is they also kept trying to work with the king and parliament. Didn't they send many letters saying, hey, you know, this, we don't agree with this, or this is not right, or could we do this, or could we, you know, they tried to peacefully reconcile with their government, with the King George III, and he just kept ignoring them. He'd either ignore them or make it worse, make the things, he, you know, punish them even worse. So I just thought, you know, there is a point in time where it's like, well, what else can you do? But say, you know what, enough is enough. You've crossed the line, dear King George III, and we're done. There's nothing more we can do to try to reconcile this peacefully, so we're done. We're kicking you out. We don't want you to govern us anymore. We want to have our own form of government. We want to be independent. Okay, so that's my take. What's yours?
Well, when we look at Liddy, this is a perfect example of two different sides not trying to understand the other side's point of view. And the colonists would do something, the king and parliament would react, the colonists would react to that, and it went back and forth for quite a long time, from 1763, after the Proclamation Act of 1763, and there were many people in parliament that begged the king to try to understand the colonists' point of view. And there was many people in the colonies that were trying to beg the colonists to understand Parliament's point of view. And both sides pretty much dig in their heels and wouldn't give in. And so finally, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back was the taxation without representation. And the majority of that statement that really the colonists reveled against was the representation. They wanted representation in Parliament. And they weren't going to get it.
Think then that would make sense. And I'm seeing then from what you just shared that the principle of having representatives to represent you in government is vital, because had they had representatives in Great Britain to represent the interests of the British Americans, it is possible that they would have been able to understand both sides better.
Correct. And with all the words that we just defined, Lydia, if the colonists had had representation in Parliament, all those words would have never been put into a document to accuse the king and Parliament of doing, because the colonists would have the representation that they so desperately wanted in Parliament.
Wow.
I mean, that's the powerful thing. When we said this whole thing wraps around the colonists wanted to be represented so they weren't abused. So there wasn't tyranny. There wasn't a tyrant. There wasn't despotism going on. And Parliament and the king refused to give colonists representation because the king and Parliament looked at colonists as second-class citizens.
Wow. So that is why our United States Constitution is amazing, is because the first thing it establishes in Article 1 is representatives. We right. have members of Congress. We have members of the House of Representatives, and then we have members of our Senate. Each state has two senators to represent the people of that state, and then has a portion of members of the House of Representatives according to population of that mm-hmm. state. So that way our voices can be heard in our form of government, which places a check and balance on anything going awry in our government and becoming tyrannical. Yay, United States Constitution.
Do you see how all these words that we defined would really never have been in the document if we had had the representation in Parliament and before the king that we had asked for?
I do. And then the question we can ask then is, what would happen if our representatives stopped representing us in our form of government?
And Lydia, this is why we say on almost every show that it's all of our responsibility to protect and defend our freedom and our liberty. And one of the ways we do that is by keeping our elected officials' feet to the fire and representing us and not allowing them to just abuse their power.
Which is so good.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we have our form of government and that we have that ability to hold our representatives accountable.
So, well, you asked me a question about some of the original articles that the Declaration of Independence gives accusing the king. And Lydia, one of the major ones was the king took away colonists' authority to judge themselves, to have our own court system, to have our own judges, to have our own juries. And the king decided that it was going to be a royal governor, royal judges, and a royal form of judicial system that was totally opposite of the judicial system that the colonists were under. And that really angered the colonists tremendously.
Yeah, because then there was no justice.
Right.
I mean, the judges, if they're hired by the king, can be paid by the king to judge according to the way the king wanted. And there's no justice in that. There's no fairness in that. Mm-hmm. Or to make laws that the king wanted, not that the people had any voice in. So it's just, I don't know, a lot of room for corruption under that kind of system.
And Lydia, in the British system of the judicial system, you are guilty. Prove yourself innocent.
Mm.
In our system, we are innocent, and the prosecution must come up with the evidence to form guilt. It's totally opposite.
Yeah, I like ours a whole lot better.
Oh, yes, I do too. Another major point that was really stuck in the craw of the colonists was when the king sent British troops here to the colonies, he had them living in private homes, which we call quartering. And, you know, so you might, Lydia, you might have two or three British soldiers living in your house.
That would make me kind of uncomfortable because it's just me and my daughter.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. I wouldn't want a bunch of men living here.
Ruled the house, you know?
Yeah, they would totally eat out my substance. That's what the Declaration says. They'd eat all my stuff, use my stuff, probably not be very kind.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. I know there's more, but we're going to get into more of that in the next show, the next time we do a show.
Okay.
Woo, woo. So you ready for some stories?
Yes, please share some more stories with us.
Awesome. So John Hart is another signer of the Declaration of Independence. This is a story of how his family was affected by him signing. His wife was really ill, really sick, when the British approached their home in New Jersey, and she pleaded with her husband, with John, to leave her behind and flee with their children, to run away, take the kids, just leave me behind, save our kids, save yourself. So he hid his children with relatives and then narrowly escaped himself by being captured by the British. The whole month of December 1776, he spent hiding and sleeping outside in the hills and the woods, which I don't know about you, but that's not the greatest season of the year to go on a camping trip.
Absolutely.
And he didn't have much stuff with him either. And The amazing thing is that when General Washington won the Battle of Princeton on January 3rd in 1777, he was finally able to return home, John Hart was. But here's what he discovered. He discovered that his wife had passed away, his home was in ruins, and he was not able to locate his children.
Wow.
And unfortunately, he died from complications of exposure to, you know, living outside in the winter 2 years later. So he lost everything, literally, his home, his wife, his children.
How about Abraham Clark, which I don't know much about Abraham Clark as one of the signers.
Well, his is amazing, too, because after he signed the Declaration of Independence, he and his wife promised each other that no matter what, they would not betray their country. Later on, the British destroyed all their property and captured one of their sons. And what the British would do is they would hold their captives on their British prison ships.
Mm-hmm.
And they threatened to withhold food from their son unless Abraham abandoned the cause of freedom, kind of like reneged on the Declaration of Independence. But because of that promise he and his wife made with each other, they chose freedom for the American people. The British, I'm guessing, withheld food from their son. I could not discover for myself doing research whether or not their son lived. Mm-hmm. But could you imagine moms and dads out there having to make that kind of choice between your son or daughter's life? Or freedom? Wow. There's one more, Francis Lewis. Do we have time for him? I think we could squeeze him in.
I think we do.
So he was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. He lived in Long Island, and the British came and destroyed his home. And because Francis Lewis was not there, they took his wife prisoner as payback for Francis signing the Declaration of Independence. And she was incarcerated in a prison in New York City for several months. It was filthy. It was cold. They denied her a change of clothing and proper food and water. Can you imagine treating a woman like that? And because of that, her health deteriorated. She wasn't able to fully recuperate, and she died 2 years later. So those are three stories, John Hart, Abraham Clark, and Francis Lewis, whose families suffered because of, as well as them, as well as for signing the Declaration of Independence.
Tremendous sacrifice these people made for us.
Yep, so true. We love them.
Yes, we do. And we certainly appreciate what they did for us. We need to continue that on for the next generation. So thank you, Lydia, for sharing three of those stories. We look forward to you sharing more with us in upcoming shows.
Absolutely.
So we'd like to invite everyone from 8 to 108 to ponder this. What thoughts or ideals entered your mind about what you can do to defend and preserve liberty in our community, country, and state? Make a plan and commit to doing it.
And now we invite you to see what the We the Kids Liberty Players are up to.
Hi, my name is Sammy. I'm 10. I live in Arizona.
And my name is Brendan. I'm 14 and live in Indiana.
And I'm 14, live in South Carolina.
My name is Soria.
We're the We the Kids Liberty Players.
We're the We the Kids Liberty Players.
We're the We the Kids Liberty Players.
The Liberty Players present a History Mr. Guest. Over the last several weeks, the Liberty Players have been interviewing living historians about what it was like during the American Revolutionary War era. We have been so intrigued about our founding fathers that we went back in time to meet many of them. Today, we can interview a History Mr. Guest that we traveled through time to meet and answer our questions. Here are three clues we will share with you to help figure out who our History Mr. Guest is. The first clue is, this person was born in 1744 and lived in Weymouth, Massachusetts.
The second clue is, this person was the second First Lady and the first Second Lady.
And the third clue is, while her husband was president, Congress referred to her as Mrs. President.
Do you know who today's History Mr. Guest is? Brennan, can you please tell us?
It's Mrs. Abigail Adams.
Miss Abigail Adams was born in 1744 in Weymouth, Massachusetts. She was the second eldest daughter of Reverend William Smith, an old light Puritan minister, and Mrs. Elizabeth Quincy Smith, Her mother taught Abigail and her siblings, Mary, William, and Elizabeth Betsy, how to read and write. Due to her father's extensive library collection, Abigail enjoyed studying philosophy, law, politics, and history. She later debated with several members of Congress. Her husband, John Adams, became the second U.S. president. During her life, Abigail wrote over 3,000 letters to several friends and prominent people. Look, there she is! Hello, Miss Abigail Adams. My name is Sammy.
And I'm Brendan.
And my name is Storia.
We're the We the Kids Liberty Players.
It's so nice to meet you, Mrs. Adams.
Hello, Sammy, Brendan, and Storia. It's so good to meet you.
Mrs. Adams, we have some questions we would like to ask you. My question is, why did the British government keep adding more taxes on the colonists?
Thank you, Brendan. The British Parliament and King George III needed more tax money to pay for the hefty national debt that Britain had incurred from the Seven Years' War against France, and then also fighting the wars against the Indians and the French again during the wars on the colonists. There was also England's poor who threatened to riot if they were to be saddled with any more taxes. The colonists were seen as undertaxed and too well off in our prosperity. Great Britain also knew that even with one representative from the colonies, it would take months to travel via sea to vote on any bills at the House of Parliament. So they just kept on voting to raise our taxes. The British government also prohibited us from buying goods from other countries at cheaper prices. It was very personal for me as I enjoyed writing letters. The cost to buy paper and stamps doubled with these increased taxes. We, the colonists, viewed these increased taxes as punishment for working and earning money. Government only has money when it taxes the people. And as the British government became richer, we, the colonists, became poorer. And the resulting inflation from all the increased taxes and the higher goods to buy goods just became unbearable.
Mrs. Adams, my question is, why didn't the Magna Carta signed by King John of England in 1215 protect the colonists' rights?
Thank you, Storia. There is a great difference between laws written by man and those created by God. The Magna Carta in the year of our Lord, 1215, was drafted by the Archbishop of Canterbury in an attempt to settle differences and disputes by the very unpopular King George of England and the land barons. The document promised several rights to the land barons and as an agreement with the king. Part of those agreements were access to a speedy trial, limitations on feudal payments to the king, and protections of church rights. Eventually, the agreement just was soon disregarded by both sides. Therefore, the Magna Carta was merely an illusion of rights, as it could be taken away at any moment by a king or a government. The Declaration of Independence and later the United States Constitution were based on God-given rights that could not be taken away by government or a king, including a corrupt or tyrannical government.
Miss Adams, my question is, what was the reason why your husband, John Adams, represented the British soldiers who killed colonists during the Boston Massacre?
Well, thank you. In the year of our Lord, 1770, my dearest husband represented the British soldiers after the Boston Massacre because he believed that anyone accused of a crime that faced imprisonment or death should have the right to be represented by an attorney. John felt it was his duty to represent the soldiers. They had no voice in court and could not defend their version of the events, unlike the 17th century, with the execution of both the Quakers and those accused of being witches at the Salem witch trials. As it turned out, the soldiers were acting in self-defense under threat of losing their own lives from the colonists, who were taunting and physically attacking them. The soldiers were found not guilty by a jury, and my husband received much public criticism and lost many of his clients as a result. He remained true, though, to the natural rights given to us by the Lord Almighty. It was not until my husband wrote the original Massachusetts Constitution, which later became a template for the United States Constitution, did people realize that this was a right for all citizens to protect themselves against government. In it were included provisions such as a strong prohibition against unreasonable searches and seizures of personal property, the right to a speedy trial, protections against self-incrimination in court, and the freedom to practice one's religion, to name just a few of them. The Massachusetts Constitution provides that when a government does not fulfill its obligations, the people have a right to alter the government and take the necessary measures for their safety, prosperity, and happiness. For a stable government to exist requires the consent of the governed, namely, we the people and we the kids.
Mrs. Adams, do you have any words of advice for us kids today?
Yes, I actually encourage all of you to read historical documents such as the original philosophers of Socrates and Plato, and to learn how to argue and to present your positions. I also encourage you to read the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution.
Thank you for that advice, Mrs. Adams. Thank you so much for joining us and answering our questions.
Well, thank you. It was great meeting all of you.
Bye.
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 Brennan and I were so excited that we got to go back in time to meet Miss Abigail Adams that we can hardly wait until we meet next time. In the future, the We the Kids Liberty Players will invite Miss Abigail Adams back for more questions.
Until then, join us again and find out who our next History Mystery guest will be. If you would like to be a We the Kids Liberty Player, let us know.
You can contact us at wethekidsteam@gmail.com. To read more about Abigail Adams, go to wethekids.us under the We the Kids History lesson. Thank you for listening to the We the Kids radio show.
We want to invite everyone from 8 to 108 to listen, and please join us on We the Kids radio show and to hear more forgotten stories. Learn the principles of freedom that established unprecedented freedom in America so that we can all, whether we're 8 or 108, preserve our freedom.